This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, sitting in for Terry Gross. We're remembering Wayne Scott, father of country musician Daryl Scott. Wayne made a living in car factories, steel mills, and later by installing chain-link fences. He played music on the side and wrote country music songs all his life. His five boys grew up hearing him sing those songs, but Wayne rarely sang them in public. When Daryl Scott became successful enough as a performer and songwriter, writing hits for Garth Brooks, the Dixie Chicks, Travis Tritt, and others, he started his own record label. The first record he put out was This Weary Way, an album of his father singing mostly his own songs. That was about 6 years ago, when his dad was 71. Wayne Scott died in a car crash last month near his home in Corbin, Kentucky. He was 77 years old. We invited his son Daryl to talk about his father and to read a poem he wrote about his father's death. Terry spoke with Daryl Scott last week.
Daryl Scott, thank you for coming back to Fresh Air, and I just want to say how sorry I am about your father.
Thank you, Terry. Thank you very much. And it's good to be back talking with you and about my dad.
Yeah, so, you know, when I read the poem that you wrote about him, I really wanted you to read it on our show. So let me start by asking you to read it for us.
Yes, okay. This morning. My father died this morning. Car accident. His first, his last. Helicopter to trauma center. His end begun and ended all in 4 hours. Eyewitnesses say he ran a red light in front of a semi. Impact. And the car drove half a mile before resting inside a Wendy's on 25E. Corbin, Knox County, Kentucky. March 2nd, 1934, to this morning, November 18th, 2011. I feel certain he was listening to music.
That's Daryl Scott reading his poem about the death of his father, Wayne Scott. Did you write it the day of his death? Why was your impulse to write something?
Yeah, I did. I got notice. I'd played Austin, Texas the night before and was to play Dallas that night. At first I didn't know what to do, just shock. And my first instinct, very dad-like to tell you the truth, was to go do my work, you know, do my gig in Dallas. And then after, you know, 30 minutes and talking to my girlfriend and talking to my daughter, I realized they kind of knew more about what to do than I did, which was to go home. So I got a flight from Austin, you know, that very day. And so I wrote the poem on the plane from Austin to Nashville as we were on our way to Kentucky.
Has it been hard to make peace with the fact that your father apparently ran a red light when he was hit by the semi?
Yeah, well, it's just ironic. He was the most careful driver I have ever even heard about. Speed, turns, turn signals, he was just a model for that. And it was important to go to the crash site. So among other things, we were kind of handling that very next day and that weekend, me and a brother and a nephew and my children in Kentucky. We went to the crash site just to kind of piece this thing together, like literally see, okay, is this where he was, you know, turning red on a, or turning right on a red, and where would the semi would have been coming from, where the skid marks. All of that we retraced just trying to kind of, I guess, have something more real than that he was just dead or something, and to try to understand what happened.
Did it help you understand it?
I think he turned right on a red, and it's an odd intersection. It really is. And they have a lot of accidents at that intersection, we found out. And yeah, it did help. To tell you the truth, much like seeing the body, and I didn't want to see the body, but I had a brother who was with me who it was very important to see the body. And if he went in to see the body, well, I'm right behind him. And it may sound really crazy or silly, but on some level, I didn't think that he could die. I mean, I know we're all going to die, but there was something so larger than life about him, especially as a kid, that I just didn't think he could die. And so to see him in rest was really important, much like seeing the crash site and the crash car and all that. All that was really, really important.
Did you have to decide what to dress him in?
No, they showed us him almost as a favor. I don't know what the technicality in the, you know, mortuary world is, but he was to be cremated, and they just let us see him before the cremation.
Had your father asked to be cremated?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, he, you know, as sort of poor and, you know, to the bone in money that my dad was, he had actually, you know, purchased this in the past year or so, maybe even a year and a half ago or so. And I purchased the cremation package, and that was all just taken care of. And he had literally nailed the instructions of his funeral or his ending of you know, cremation, and to the wall in his cabin in Kentucky. So, I mean, it was real clear what he wanted to have happen.
Well, that must have put your mind at rest to know what he wanted and that you could just follow through on that.
Absolutely. It made it easy to follow for one thing, but it also just seemed perfectly dad to, he even picked out his songs. He, on that same sheet of paper that was nailed to the wall, was the five songs that he wanted played.
The playlist for his memorial? Or for his
yeah,
funeral?
He had it.
What
he
were the songs?
It. Well, let's see. It started with Ray Charles and Willie Nelson's Seven Spanish Angels, went into I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry, Hank Williams, and then a song that I wrote with John Anderson called World of Wonder. And then a song that he wrote, my dad wrote, that Tim O'Brien, a good friend of mine, had recorded of Dad's, called Sinner. And then it ended with a fairly contemporary country song called Long Black Train. And that was his playlist.
And that's what you all played?
We did, in the order that, you know, that he wished it to be. And again, we followed that to the letter. But I'll tell you, the most striking part of the whole time was his ashes before the sort of gathering for everybody, you know, at 2:00 in Pineville, Kentucky. I had called, you know, the immediate family, you know, just maybe 20 of us, to go to the hillside at his place where we knew that he wanted his ashes, you know, spread or put. And only one of us, and oddly enough, it wasn't a brother or a wife or anything like that. It was a friend from California who said, well, your dad told me he knew where he wanted, you know, that he'd already dug the hole for the ashes. And we said, we can't believe that. So we go up on the hill with the ashes, just the, you know, the small core of us. And there was a rock, pretty good sized rock out of place to the side of the mountain. And we said that, let's check there first. And sure enough, that was the rock. And underneath it was the cleanest 3-foot post hole digger sized hole. And we knew there he was. He'd even prepared it to that degree.
And that was on his land?
On his land, yeah. And this land is called, it's the name of the road is Scott Holler. I mean, well, the Scots have been there for the last easily 100 years. He was born in that holler. And, you know, all of his, you know, 12 brothers and sisters were born in that holler. And that's where my dad ended up, you know, the last 20 years of his life was right there, and he had the whole dog. He had it all figured out.
Was anyone else in his car?
Yeah, his wife Linda was a passenger, And, you know, thankfully she was able to walk out of the crash and had just very minor, you know, more bruise and whiplash kind of things. While he was helicoptered to Knoxville, to I guess the nearest trauma center, so she's there right now at Scott Holler, and a really good note on sort of what has happened is her two boys, one from New York State and one from Tennessee, and their families have come to be with her and live with her and help her. And live with her there in Scott Holler in Kentucky. So that really turned out as well as anyone could hope for that under these circumstances.
How much was she able to tell you about what happened?
Absolutely nothing. She has Alzheimer's, and I'm not sure where she is in it, but she couldn't recall, you know, the accident. She knew there was an accident because I guess all of us had talked about it, and while she was in the hospital in Corbin, you know, she is at that place where she almost thinks that she says that Wayne is, you know, over at my house or something like that. She kind of drifts in and out of even understanding that he's not around. And then you'll see in her face at some point of talking about it again that she does get it for a moment. And then it kind of goes away.
Sorry.
We're listening to an interview Terry Gross recorded with singer-songwriter Daryl Scott about his father, Wayne Scott, who was killed in a car crash last month near his home in Kentucky. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're remembering Wayne Scott, the father of country musician and songwriter Daryl Scott. Wayne Scott died in a car crash last month near his home in Corbin, Kentucky. He was 77 years old.
You know, many people have plans to do something special for their father or mother that they never actually get around to doing. One of the special things you did for your father was to record and release his first album. And mm-hmm. on your forthcoming album, he co-wrote two of the songs and sings on one mm-hmm. of the tracks. I hope that gives you some comfort to know that you did that for him.
Oh, absolutely. It really does. Well, he was my father, obviously, and there can be a sense of, you know, just doing it for the old man kind of approach. And to tell you the truth, if that's all it was, I'm fine with that, too. I have no problem with that. But I just have to say, as a songwriter and artist and musician on my own, he just had an authenticity, and I knew that, you know, as his son, but also as another songwriter and musician, like, man, this guy really tells it like it is. He's authentic. He doesn't even know how to begin to be commercial or promotional or anything like that. You know, on my first record, I had a song of his on my record. And then I did record, I actually recorded two albums of my dad. One hasn't been released yet, and I wish I could have had the second one out in his lifetime, but now that he's passed, it's on the top of my list. So I've included him in my world again, just because, I mean, he's the real deal, and he's also my father, but he's also the real deal as a singer and artist, especially of country music.
Yeah. How did it change your father's life to have that album released? Because we spoke just as it was released.
Yeah.
And, you know, I never knew what impact did that album actually have?
You know, it was funny. He did fight me, so to speak, about even recording it. Like, you know, I'm an old man. I'm washed up. I don't do this stuff. Why do you want to record a record? And I always told him, because we have to document this. We just simply have to have you recording these before we don't have that option anymore. So he would sort of fight me, and then he'd get in on the session, you know, and I'd do it always in a kind of a very, a way that I knew would work for him, which is basically set up microphones around the living room or kitchen and bring in, you know, some of the world's greatest players who would get my dad, like Guy Clark, like Tim O'Brien and Dirk Powell and Danny Thompson from London, England. And then my dad would absolutely have you know, a ball, sitting there singing with Guy Clark. It was who was one of his heroes. He loved hearing himself on the radio. There was a radio station up in Kentucky that played his kind of music, and he would get to hear himself. One of the things he would always do, and this at Crash is an example, is he'd get up every morning crazy early, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning, and just drive around the mountains. And I know he would listen. He would hear himself on the radio, and I know that had to be a big thing for him to have heard himself on radio, riding around those Kentucky hills.
Well, I want to close with a song that he co-wrote with you, mm-hmm. I think when you were 16. That's on your forthcoming album. The album's called Long Way Home. Tell mm-hmm. us the story behind writing the song.
Yeah.
It's called The Country Boy.
The Country Boy. And what was really interesting is as a 16-year-old, I had a relationship with my dad that had us working on songs together. So one weekend, and this was while we were living in California, my dad rented a cabin up in Big Bear Lake, up in the San Bernardino Mountains, and just the two of us went up there with the sole purpose of writing songs. And so I'm 16, and he was, I guess, 41 at the time. And sure enough, we got up there, and I had a song started that's also on this new record, and he helped me finish it. And and then he had a song called The Country Boy that he had started, and I helped him finish it. And when we came back, you know, Sunday night or whatever it was, you know, we had these two songs. And it's funny, I'm not 16 anymore. I'm, you know, 52. It's taken me this long to record those songs. But that's the thing about this new album is it's very, very old country. It's very country music like my dad knew and like my mom knew.
Well, your father sounds so good on this.
He really does, doesn't he?
Yeah. So let's hear that. And I just want to say again how sorry I am and how glad I am that you were able to record him. And I look forward to another album of his that you'll be releasing. I'm glad
Absolutely.
I found that out. And, you know, you gave something special to the rest of us by making sure that he was recorded. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you. I it's a pleasure of mine to have done that and that we even have more music to come.
Yeah, so I appreciate talking with you again. Sorry it was for this occasion, and thank you very much.
Thanks, Terry.
Okay, be well.
Terry Gross spoke with Daryl Scott last week about his father, Wayne Scott, who died last month at the age of 77. Daryl Scott's new CD, Long Ride Home, features two songs he wrote with his father, Wayne. Here's Daryl and Wayne Scott singing one of them, The Country Boy.
Did you ever have a nickel and wished you had a dime? Did you ever try to search your soul but could not find your mind? Did you ever lay your body down with someone that don't love you? The country boy has been there. That's what makes him sing the blues. It's not the drinks you bought him, it's not the tips you gave. From the rocking of his cradle to the covering of his grave, you'll never know the loneliness and sorrow he goes through. The country boy has been there. That's what makes him sing the blues. There's no tears in his eyes.
But the lonely know he's crying out all the hurt he feels inside.
He's singing to their broken hearts. That's all that's left to do. The country boy has been there. That's what makes him sing the blues.
That's Daryl Scott and his father Wayne Scott singing a song they wrote together. It's on the new Daryl Scott CD, Long Ride Home. Wayne Scott's album of his own songs, produced by his son Daryl in 2005, is called This Weary Way.